Oh my goodness. I get to be back here again. How fun is this? It's marvelous. I'm delighted whenever Bridget calls, I go, oh good, goody, goody. And what a marvelous spring we are having. Oh my goodness. I've had the opportunity to drive all over the state of Oregon and down into California, Northern California, and around and then back up the coast. And oh, it's like I'm constantly in a thank you mode, right? So beautiful, so brilliant, so alive, so nurturing, so supportive. Oh, my. And there are some issues going on in this wonderful world we live in. Yeah, a few of us have noticed, yeah. You know, one of the things that I do if I'm driving a little longer than the body really wants to be driving is I listen to the radio. Not always wise. And fortunately, you know, as I go through various parts of the country, I get to hear different parts of what's going on in radio world and radio land. And a lot of it is available through various forms of community radio and public radio and folks who are sharing what's going on in their intellect and in their communities. And some of it is, you know, people who are incredibly brilliant and are operating on a set of assumptions I cannot even begin to understand. And I follow their logic and I go, I see where you're going with that, but wow, can you see the possibility of a different way of looking at it, right? And I'm beginning to realize more and more fully what I had begun to see when I was a practicing futurist years ago. And in order to see that person, I have to stand way over here. So I'm gonna move around a lot. So when I was practicing as a futurist, we were knowing that this period, the mid-2020s, was the point at which everything that had been normal in the 50s would no longer be normal. And we are seeing that, aren't we? Yeah. So when I was putting this talk together, an image kept coming to mind. I'm going, no. Yes. No. And it's a little story that someone told me years ago. And that was the pair of twins in the womb. It's been marvelous. Totally supported, totally embraced, loved, cared for, room to wiggle around a little bit. And then they're getting closer and closer, and there's not much room left. And the fluid is getting kind of yucky. The amniotic fluid seems to be being polluted. Ooh. Oh, I don't know. Do you believe in life after birth? You know, and then the contractions happen, and then they're really not certain, right? But there is life after every birth. Whether we call it leaving the body or whether we call it the end of the world as we knew it for the emergence of a new kind of world. It is time now. It is time when love is the root of our actions, not fear. The culture we've been living in is based on fear. And from fear comes the need for, the believed need for, control. When it's based on love, we don't need to control. And those of us who have been parents have felt that shift, right? When we're getting fearful, we're trying to control them. Oh no, you don't want to do that. If you do that, oh no, right? But when we're in that opening, loving, knowing that all is well and it's all love and we are totally nourished and supplied no matter what, and we've created safe spaces for them, then we can let them just be who they are, and we encourage their becoming who they are. Yes?
Yes.
Does anyone here remember being in the womb? Okay, just thought I'd check. About 300,000 years ago, there were several forms of the genus Homo. We're finding more and more every year with the new archaeological tools that are out there. And all these forms lived in the womb of Earth. They were not aware, self-aware of being potentially separated from the all that is that they were living in, any more than the twins were in the womb in my little story, right? We're just there. We're just being. We're totally supplied and nurtured. We're embraced, we're supported. Sometimes there may be a little bit of a rough thing if something's going on out there that's weird, but we're not aware of it, right? And for all the variations on the genus Homo, it was be simply be. Balance is normal. The universe is overwhelmingly supplying. It's easy. Summertime. They played Summertime while we were coming in this morning. And then about 300,000 years ago, and according to some models based on Zachariah Sitchin, that would be 350,000 years ago, because we're due for another visit in 10,000. That would have been when the 12th planet was close and that there was, whoops, sorry about that. Bingo. There was something, a technological something. And what we don't know, there, we're back. What we don't know is exactly what happened, but have any of you seen an image where a guru or a shaman or a Christian healer taps someone on the head and there's this huge wake up? It's kind of like that happened. And this form of humanity, the anatomically modern human, Homo sapiens sapiens, was beginning to operate on this planet. It was almost instantaneous. It was while all these other variations were happening. Sapiens sapiens is not only knowing, but knowing that we know. We are self-aware. Some of you may recall that movie, 2001, and the big thing and the waking up. Might have been like that. So now we have the awareness that I am, and that's there. And I am not part of that, and yet it's not, somehow it's related to me, right? So we think what has happened for the last 300,000 years is that Homo sapiens sapiens has had to reunite the frontal cortex with the rear cortex, if you will, the back cortex, the left brain with the right brain for 300,000 years, 350. Well, during that time, the ice ages happened, and all kinds of wonderful things were going on all over the planet, shifts, changes. And it looked like some of those folks, based on the evidence, it looks as if some of those folks went into the ice fields and followed the big herds, the mammoth, the woolly mammoth, right? And the large animals that were there. And had great tales of how it was when we were bringing down this huge animal, and then they could take some of the meat home and take more of the meat home because it was a natural ice box out there. And they could bring it home to the cave and tell the great stories about what happened. We encountered this monstrous being and so did this and so did this. And the final thing was this, and it was just fascinating. And they were telling stories about this around the fires while they were in between hunts. And then the ice began to recede. And with the receding of the ice begins to be the receding of those big animals. And the fear of losing our source of supply. And the realization that, well, we don't just have to follow where they're going. You know, we could kind of encourage them to be where we are. So we shift from following big animals to herding somewhat smaller animals. And we start seeing the beginning of herding of horses and cattle, and then smaller and smaller all the way down to goats over a period of several hundred thousand years. And the stories remain the same because culturally that is how we entertain ourselves. This is all going on in the very far north of this planet. Meanwhile, as things go south, the glaciers are beginning to recede, right? So there are new valleys opening up and new beautiful verdant landscapes. And people can settle down instead of trying to find the food that has been being moving around so much. So we begin to get what I call the river gardening cultures. And these are people, Homo sapiens sapiens, who have felt separate but know that they can work with natural processes. So when we celebrate solstice, we are working with the natural processes, right? And as people began to do that, there began to be that sense of partnership and mutual independence and support and sharing. And that was the cultural norm there. So up in the ice area, it's, I am the big hero, and I am herding, and I have bulls and horses and all kinds of ways that the male is in charge. And in the river gardening villages, it's, wow, well, you know, women tend to do this better, and men tend to do that better, and let's get together on the holy days, right? And there's none of that sense of anyone is in charge. But what begins to emerge in that gardening village environment, and we can see it in all the indigenous cultures today, is that those with special gifts get to lead in that area, in that area, in that area. And different people have different kinds of wisdom, right? So I might have plant wisdom. I might have fish wisdom. I might have earth wisdom, right? I may be able to share this. And some people somehow managed to hang on from before that breakthrough 350,000 years ago, that awareness of the one of which we are part. And that intuitive knowing that we are not separate from all that is. And it's usually about 1% of any community that has this. And those people would be specially honored, especially at the times where we're celebrating the balancing. And the woman that is especially honored at that time is honored in what we call the month of May, particularly, for she embodies the nurturing, supportive presence that is all around us always. Now, as cultures evolved and we got cities and we got temples and all of that, that person was called the high priestess. It used to be called the medicine woman or something like that, the wise woman, the head woman of the village. And in the Old Testament, we see that Miriam was that woman when Moses and the people leave Egypt. Miriam calls them to dance and celebrate that we are in the one and we are free. And that's the last time we see the word Miriam in her story. It lasts a little longer than that. In the whole Old Testament. So, those of you who have read the New Testament and have ever looked at a book called Strong's Concordance may be aware that, oh my goodness, there are six women named Miriam around Jesus. But there are none before that. That's weird, right? So, because people periodically ask me what I think about various things, I go off and do some research, and I end up writing a book that I'm calling Madonna, Magdalene, and Beyond, to understand who and what this Miriam being is, right? So as the story unfolds, the glaciers continue to move away, and along about 8,000 years ago, we see some of those people coming out of that area who are strong men, bulls, who want a lot of cows. And there aren't any. There aren't enough. So they start coming out, and it's about every 200 years, coming out of that Caucasus region. The Caucasian men come into the valleys where smaller, darker people are sharing and knowing and supporting each other with the wisdom of the elder woman, the priestess, if you will. And the men come in, and there's no room in these people's awareness, in the village people's awareness, there's no room for someone coming and taking things. Who would take? We're all here. We all have plenty. Right? But they take. And they take, and they take, and they take. And over a 6,000-year period, we see a shift from independent villages to city-states with someone in charge. So about 6,000 years ago, 4,000 BC, we have the first recorded empire, a network of city-states, a guy named Sargon. Interestingly, he had to tell a story that he was born of the goddess. And that he was found in a basket in a river. Oh, we've never heard that story. It was the only way that the local people would accept him as if he was directly tied to the all-nurturing great mother that is everywhere present. Because that one woman in every community that was in touch with that kept reminding them, we are supported, we are nurtured, we are supplied, because our mother, the earth, or the great mother that the earth is the manifestation of, is loving us always. And we are living in the womb of the earth. Unfortunately, though, that message kind of got buried. Kind of, sort of. And only indigenous cultures, of which there are very few left, but you know, that used to be all that there was 6,000 years ago, but now we're down to 100 or so that are able to live the way that they were born to live. They haven't been colonialized by us. They haven't been empired by us. They haven't been, you know, shifted into this way of thinking that there's a guy in charge and we all do what he says. What's really interesting about right now is that idea sounds pretty ridiculous. 50 years ago, it wouldn't have sounded ridiculous. 100 years ago, it wouldn't have sounded ridiculous. But we have come to a point where we get that it can't be that way. That either it's a mutually interdependent, mutually supportive system, or it fails. All the science points us to that. All the history points us to that. All the empires that have formed since 4000 BC have failed. Every one of them. In some ways, this is the last little niggling bit of their old Roman Empire. As we work with this idea, it's almost always a combination of pollution, garbage, and the sickness that comes with those, the using up of the immediate local resources, and the constant expansion to get more resources and using up those and more and using up those. And that's why Canada knows that what Trump is talking about is we want their land and their resources, because we've used up most of what's in this part of this continent, right? They're seeing that traditional empire pattern, and more people are going, traditional empire patterns don't work. And part of why that is happening is because Homo sapiens sapiens is mutating. And we are becoming Homo spiritualensis. Some say Homo spiritus. That is, we are no longer so concerned about what's going on in the left frontal cortex, but we're paying attention to the whole rear portion of the brain, where it happens that what we call the God spot is located. That place in the brain that feels the oneness and knows that we are totally supported and sustained. And when we are in meditation and prayer and in the right place in the music, and you've already had it at least once already today, we can be that. Yes? That's what's going on now. Now, it was necessary for the globalization of intercommunication networks to happen for all of humanity to get to this place. Does that make sense? So even though there are a lot of things that empire culture has done that I do not like, the fact of it allowed us to get to this place. So just like the amniotic fluid becomes polluted in the womb and the infant begins to realize there's got to be something better than this, we are going through that now. We are going now through that process of being really uncomfortable that allows us to choose to move into a state of being that is freedom from love and from knowing. So there was the womb state prior to Homo sapiens sapiens where we were totally unconsciously in it. Then there was this state of becoming that has been this last 350,000 years that is becoming aware and doing a lot of shifts and changes and waking up to possibilities. And now there is this time of being aware and totally connected and interrelated and supported and nurtured and supplied. Are you up for that?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. How do we get there? There's a question mark on my title today, right? A new birth question mark, right? Because some of us will choose not to go there. Some of us will say, this is so uncomfortable, I'm out. And that's okay. They'll work from the other side. They don't know it yet. But they'll be working with us and for us on the other side of that veil, which is almost gone, by the way. That very, very, very thick veil between life and death is almost dissolved. And that is part of being Homo spiritualensis, or spiritus, depending on whoever decides what language we use. Being the spiritual beings that we are, totally aware of our unified beingness on this glorious planet that is the embodiment of nurturing love. And aware that who and what we are does have the capacity to move a mountain with the thought, we don't need to build a big machine anymore. Can you consider that possibility? We are constantly using telekinesis. Our bodies are the material manifestation of our brain, our mind. We are constantly changing matter. We may not realize that it, you know, there isn't this glass walking toward me because I called it to me, right? But wow, I just made all kinds of interesting material changes, didn't I? We are telekinetic, and we have that capacity all the time. But we've been taught we can't, because in a culture of fear and control, oh, don't let people know they can do that. Did anyone see John Travolta's movie Phenomenon?
Yeah.
I loved it when he's reaching for the wrench and the wrench just comes to him, right? Yeah, that's us. It's just his tumor dissolved the blocks, so he was doing what we can all do. What we can all do. We are all telepathic. Rupert Sheldrake's studies show it over and over again that 80% of the time we know who is calling when they are calling us before we pick up the phone. We may or may not acknowledge that we know that. That our bodies, and the Institute of Noetic Sciences has demonstrated this, our bodies change physiologically when someone somewhere else, totally disconnected from us, has thoughts about us. And if it's positive, we wake up, and if it's negative, we shut down. Isn't that interesting? That's why we do treatments. We're all telepathic, and we're all telekinetic. We have just been trained not to. So the myriams that were surrounding the man we call Jesus Christ all knew these things. They knew that the universe is energy showing up in various forms of matter. They knew, Mary the mother knew that Jesus could make water into wine. That wasn't an issue. She had taught him. Miriam, the mother Mary. Miriam, the sister of Martha. Miriam, the wife of Cleophas. Miriam, etc., etc. Six of them. And the most important one, the one who is always taller, and that tells you they're most important, is carrying an alabaster jar because she is the heir from Miriam, the mother, of the position of the wise woman, the head woman for all of Israel, and must be the one to anoint the King of Kings. And we call her the Magdalene. Wow. The Templars knew this. They created chapels to the Magdalene and to John the Baptist because they knew that Jesus had to stand in for John because Miriam Salome, had caused John the Baptist to be publicly executed but didn't have everything in place for his resurrection. So Jesus had to step in. That's the Templar story. And with that, then the Miriams are there to make sure that the public execution moves to the resurrection. They're holding the energy. They know, they understand how this works because it is all one whole. And so, in my book, I lay out the possibility, and I'm going to run it past you and see what you think, okay? So this is the possibility. We have six powerful women who are healers, who are transformers, who hold the harmony of the villages and the lineages that they come from. And they are following this guy who is now anointed as the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, Messiah. Messiah. And the time is coming. The Passover festival happens to be happening at the time that all astrologers and everyone at that time were astrologers, know that the sun will be eclipsed. And the closer to the equator you are when the sun is eclipsing, the more likely there is going to be an earthquake. And besides, we're all telekinetic, so we'll make sure that happens. So it's a little tough. You got to time it right. He has to enter the city. He has to get that Sanhedrin really mad at him. He has to get everything in place. They have to get everything in place. They have to have the Passover supper so that he can tell all the disciples, the 12 and the 72 and the 360, all the things they need to know, right? And then he has to be in an isolated, lonely place where the soldiers can come get him. So they get it all set up. And the Miriams are all wide awake, holding the energy for this the whole night long. And then it happens. The soldiers come. One of the guys goes, no, 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 and grabs a sword and cuts off the guy's ear. And Jesus says, don't do that. Puts the ear on, and then they keep going. What? Nobody pays attention to that piece of the story. And they go through the whole crucifixion process. It's very public. Everyone is involved. I won't get into the details of all the names and what they mean. But then it happens, and he's up there on the cross, and it's 3 hours before the eclipse. They finally got him. And all the women are wide awake. They haven't stopped. They're holding the energy. All the Miriams are there at the bottom of the cross. They're standing there at the foot of the cross, knowing they have to hold the energy, just like our practitioner holds the energy for us, right? And they're holding the energy, and they're seeing what can happen. And they make sure that he is getting all the support he needs. And we won't go into why he can do what he did. That's a whole nother story. But when he gets there, he's there, and they're holding the energy, and he is able to, in this dire physical circumstance, be forgiveness. And there is where any last barrier he might have had to being able to be what they have called for him to be, to happen. And 3 hours on the cross, instead of 3 days, which is what it normally takes, the eclipse is happening, and he has given up his spirit. It is finished. The eclipse happens, the earthquake happens, the veil, the curtain in front of the Holy of Holies breaks from the top down. Can you imagine? I mean, it's on this bar, and it breaks from the top down, tears apart. Now everyone in the temple can see the Holy of Holies, where God is living, in the dark earthquake in Jerusalem on that day. And so the gals are right there, all the Miriams. They have the necessary linens. They wrap the linens, and they put layers of herbs in between. Guys can't handle bodies. If you ever see a picture of the guys handling dead bodies, forget it. They can't. It's illegal in Israel, especially not during Passover. So these women are doing all of this work, and they lay them on something, and then the Roman centurions put them in this, in, you know, Joseph of Arimathea's cave that he set aside, and the stone is put in place. And now the women really get to work, because they have to hold the knowing, even though they've just wrapped the body in mortuary linens. Whew! And they do. For all of the next 24 hours. And the next 12 hours. And then in the pre-dawn light, which was illegal, by the way, Magdalene heads over to the cave with more anointing. Now, here's an interesting little piece. This particular drama, apart from the eclipse and the earthquake and all of that, has happened every time Venus has transited the sun all of the times to make the flower of life for 3,000 years before this particular date. It's woven into empire culture because it's part of how the river gardening people will be kept into the culture. What has happened here, though, is they don't have the official prince, the official emperor. They have this upstart rabbi from the Judean province, and he has been anointed, and he is doing this process. And the formula for the high priestess to say in front of the cave on the morning of the third day after the public execution is, where have they taken my Lord? If he's been resurrected. He had been resurrected many times in previous cycles of those 3,000 years. And he was in this one. But it's dark outside. It's not really light. And she can't see that he's standing right there. And so it's not till she hears the voice that she realizes that the love of her life, that is, the person that she is destined to be with for eternity, is right there standing up. And that it worked. All of their effort worked. Putting together all the pieces from the actual history, the archaeology, and the biblical story, that's how I frame what we call Easter. And there's more to it than that. But the Magdalene is one of many Miriams who have always known, always. That's their essence, that who we are is so much more than we've been taught. And we are no longer stuck in that limited sense of self. For the last 10, 15 years, there have been a lot of stories about the Magdalene. In fact, there's a copy of Dan Brown's book in there. I noticed that today. A lot of stories about the Magdalene. And in fact, there have been at least 15 different channeled works that are her autobiography, and they all have a different story. I'm fascinated by this. I finally accepted, well, maybe there are multiple universes, and we'll go with that. But the essence of all of them is, I am not who you were told I am. I am, in fact, the embodiment of the Divine Mother. And so are you. And Jesus said, I am, in fact, the embodiment of the Divine Father, and so are you. And that is the birthing we are going through now. To become the embodiment of that divinity with all of that capacity, with all of that understanding, with all of that wisdom, all of that knowing that is who and what we actually are. And that's why you come here on a Sunday, to wake up at just another little notch. And I've been talking far too long, but I really appreciate you moving with me on this, because I know that you are the seeds of the culture that is replacing the empire now. Thank you.